And I didn't realize I was going to give the last talk in the conference. So I would like to thank the organizers also for organizing the whole conference. It was very lovely. So my talk today is about how to get topological behavior from systems that are non-topological, but merely by putting them together. Namely, you take matter, you take light, either one is trivial topologically, you put them together, and you get something topological. And my collaborators in this work, actually the people responsible for this work, are Thorsten Kartzig, who's moved to Station Q just a few weeks ago from Caltech, Charles Burdeen, who I believe many of you know much better than I do, who's at Caltech, Tim Liu, Singapore, and Nate Lindner used to be at Caltech and is now in the Technion as an assistant professor. Okay, so I'll start by thinking about showing you how to take a trivial solid-state system, shine light on it, and turn it into a topological phase. That's the so-called Floquet topological phase, or Floquet topological insulator. And we'll then show you how you can use the same principles to get get in a system that's trivial to show topological behavior in its excitations, namely in its polariton spectrum. And this will be topological polaritons. And then I'll show you some more recent work about how to make topological bosonic excitations in a much simpler way, namely using indirect excitons or just a generic system of excitons coupled to split TE and TM photonic modes. So it's the last talk. We have until the evening. So feel free to ask me any questions you want during the talk. Don't let me run away. Okay, so instead of making a long introduction about topological physics, which I assure you I can do, but you know, the last talk in the conference, so you probably heard like 5 of those this week, maybe. So I'll just say very quickly the stuff that I need. So let's think about topological insulators in 2D. The first example was cadmium telluride, mercury telluride sandwiches. And those consist of electrons. They have spin up and spin down. Here's the Hamiltonian for spin up electron. It has the form of a vector dotted with a pseudospin Pauli matrix. X component Px, y component of this vector is Py. And there's a z component, which depends on the momentum squared. It has a gap plus a momentum squared contribution. And depending on whether m times b is positive or negative, whether m and b are of the same sign or of opposite sign, you'll get topological behavior or trivial behavior. So for instance, the trivial behavior, both of these have the same sign. And let's explore what's the direction of the pseudospin does as a function of momentum. At the gamma point, these are 0. This is positive, so the pseudospin points up. As we explore the pseudospin direction at larger and larger momenta in the two-dimensional Brillouin zone, we reach the conclusion that even at large momenta, so at first, you increase momenta, sigma x and sigma y component kick in, and that's why on the unit sphere, you see the pseudospin direction tending a little bit more to the south. But then as you increase momentum even further, the z component, which has p squared, takes over everything, and it goes back up to the north pole. So that's non-topological behavior. The unit sphere is not covered at all. And this is just called a semiconductor, right? But things become interesting if you change the relative sign of these two things. And now if you probe the pseudospin direction, so this vector h, as a function of momentum, you start again at the gamma point with the pseudospin pointing in the z direction. But now, as you change absolute value of momentum, the pseudospin tends more and more south. And there's a point in which the z component is actually 0, because the p squared is large enough such that the bp squared overcomes the m. And at even larger momenta, you tend more and more to the south. And when you're done with the Brillouin zone, you realize that your pseudospin has covered the unit sphere. So that's a topological phase. This is the TKNN number, or the Chern number of the bend. We have a topological insulator. So of course, in mercury telluride, cadmium telluride, quantum wells, this is just half the story, literally. It's the spin half, the spin up part of the story. You do time reversal, you get the spin down part of the story. So there are two of these bands. All right. So the first thing I want to tell you about is how to use the principle of this construction of topological behavior to take a trivial semiconductor and turn it topological. So this is work that was done on the heels of work by Aoki and Oka, who showed how to take a honeycomb lattice turn it into a Haldane model using the static part of the two-photon part of the driving. But we were, together with Nate Lindner and Victor Galitsky, we were interested in how to take a photon field and with the one photon resonance turn the system topological. And this was done in parallel to other works at the Harvard group. And then we joined forces, of course, to think about generalizations. All right, so how does it go? Let's think of, again, about the mercury telluride, cadmium telluride type quantum well. So same Hamiltonian. Same half of the Hamiltonian, again spin up, but trivial phase. So in the trivial phase, here's a cut of the dispersion, momentum, and energy. Sorry. Here's the pseudo spin in the valence band. You see nothing topological. It points up at the gamma point, it points up far away from the gamma point, it does something in between. You should imagine this to be cylindrically symmetric. In the conduction band, the pseudospin does exactly the opposite. And now we add a drive. And the drive mixes the two bands. We do it with a particular matrix form. We can also, this is using a Zeeman-like coupling between the light and the electrons. You can also do it directly with the electric field of a circularly polarized light. That's much better, actually, but harder to explain. Now, to see what happens, let's do a rotating wave approximation, bring these two bands together. Here's the original band structure. Let the resonances resolve themselves. We get a new cut to the band structure that looks like, you know, the cut through a volcano. And here's the pseudospin. The pseudospin far away from the resonance in the valence band is the pseudospin in the original valence band. But now the crater in the new valence band is actually the bottom of the old conduction band. And that has a pseudospin that points in the opposite direction. So the pseudospin definitely went from the North Pole to the South Pole. And the question is, what does it do in between at the resonance string? And to think about that, wait, I shouldn't run so quickly. Let's move to Hamiltonian, just describing the system in terms of the conduction and valence electrons, C's and D's. And of course, we can write a new Hamiltonian. We can write the Hamiltonian directly like this. This is the energy relative to the resonance line. And here are the terms that resolve any resonance due to the radiation. I can write this in terms of Pauli matrices, and it's easier to write. Right, so here's the Hamiltonian, conduction and valence electrons. This is in the rotating wave approximation, so all we need is the kinetic energy relative to the resonance line. Here's a three-dimensional sketch of the band structure. And of course, the one-photon resonance mixes the two bands. It produces a term in the Hamiltonian that looks like tau x and tau y. And the things that multiply tau x and tau y are some complex number g, which is a function of momentum. And the question of whether we have wrapping around the unit sphere in these terms for this pseudospin just basically boils down to the question of whether this number g wraps around the complex plane around the origin. So let's take a closer look at this g. So here's the Hamiltonian I had before in terms of the valence band and conduction band. What is g? Well, g is just the question of, can we excite, that's the matrix element of an electron from the valence band to go to the conduction band at some momentum p. Now, with the light matter coupling that we chose, we use the Zeeman coupling. So we have a sigma z. Here are the eigenstates in the valence and conduction bands. And you see that a sigma z mixes these bands exactly to give you an e to the I theta p dependence. So as we probe this g as a function of momentum on the resonance ring that we have produced, we get this picture. So this is a bit of a complicated figure. Px and Py describe the band structure. The yellow ring is the resonance ring. And then the inset graphs, the inset arrows, are the complex number g in the complex plane. And you see that under this example, in this example, it starts off real. It becomes mixed, imaginary, mixed, negative real, negative imaginary, and so forth. It goes around the origin of the complex plane. So we get a topological nature in this new pseudospin Hamiltonian that emerge from the rotating wave approximation. Questions?
Can you get other degrees besides 0 and 1?
Yes. So depending on how you do this, you can get different wrappings. For instance, if I had used a circularly polarized light, then I would have, so circularly polarized light with an electric field in the plane of the quantum well, that would actually give you bigger gaps, and also it'll give you a double wrapping. And I bet you can come up with more complicated schemes depending on the material you're using. Any other questions? All right, you don't have to believe me that this is true. We simulated it. So we took a cylinder that describes a trivial semiconductor. Here's the band structure projected on the direction parallel to the open edge of the cylinder, energy, momentum. And now we simulated exactly the time-dependent problem and got the quasi-energy eigenstates. And this is the new band structure describing pretty much what I told you before from the rotating wave approximation. And you see these nice edge states emerging, one in each side of the cylinder, one going right, one going left. OK, so this seems to work. Now, typically, when I give a talk like this to a solid-state audience, I start getting a lot of murmuring in the audience. And then somebody captures enough confidence and asks me, but aren't you going to heat the hell out of the system? Aren't you going to heat the system a lot? And the answer is, I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe you can deal with it. But those questions, you know, made me do two things. One, go back and join forces with a lot of the same group to figure out how you can get reasonable quasi-thermal steady states for Fouquet-driven solid-state systems. But then the question is, you know, if what we're doing here with the Fouquet topological insulator type research is you take a quantum well, that's trivial, you shine a lot of light on it, and that produces topologically protected edge states, topologically protected orbitals, this you do with a lot of photons. Essentially, what you're doing is you're producing a gas of a lot of excitons that have some topological properties. If that leads to heat, then we should ask ourselves, what can we do with one photon and one exciton? And the question is, the system that could produce a Fouquet topological insulator, if we shine enough light on it, does it have something in it that tells us about this potential that we can probe with a single photon? And the answer I'll show you is pretty much yes. So as we all know, so the question is whether we can make a polariton that moves on the edge and is topologically protected. So as we know, a polariton is a combination of an exciton and a photon. And if we turn this thing into a topological polariton, then it is only natural to call this thing a topolariton. And you don't find it so funny. I think it was a different version before of this, which was topopolariton. But I like it with a single peel. OK, so how does it work? We need excitons. We need photons. The excitons in the quantum well are easy to understand. Particle-hole combination pretty much on either side of the gamma point. And there's a Coulomb attraction between them that makes them a bound state. And pretty much we can write an excitation creation operator for an exciton that consists of an excitation creation of an electron, annihilation of a valence band electron, so creation of a hole. And these together have some kind of a wave function, pretty much like a hydrogen atom. But the important thing is there's a center of mass momentum, which is Q. And there's a dispersion that pretty much matches the dispersion of the electrons across the gap. It starts off at about the gap and then goes up. So gap minus binding energy and usually goes up with momentum. So far, so good. Now, we want to hybridize this excitons with a photon, right? But we want the photon to be strongly coupled, so we want to have the photon trapped in a cavity, two-dimensional cavity, and move in the x and y direction. We're going to put the quantum well in between the mirrors in a second. So of course, the photon itself also has creation operator, and it's associated with the polarization. So pretty much the vector potential becomes this combination, and there's another dispersion that might be a little bit gapped because of the optical cavity at low momenta. And now, at least as a theorist, I can put these two things together, in which case the photons and the excitons would hybridize. So here's the photon, here's the exciton, and here are the two dispersions. They're both bosonic. There's nothing that tells us they cannot hybridize, and in fact they do, and they form polaritons. And those polaritons, pretty much the two move together. Of course, this animation shows you the lack of talent, the lack of my talent in animating these things, because of course I should show the photon disappearing as the exciton appears, and you know, do this alternatively. But yeah, I'm sorry, my expertise with PowerPoint was not that high. Okay, so what we end up with is a polariton, lower polariton, upper polariton branch. Here's the typical creation operator. Here's the Hamiltonian for this thing. Right, so photon piece, exciton piece, and the mixing piece. What is the mixing piece? Again, it depends on the complex number g, which is a function of momentum. And it's most important around where the two are resonating. Do we have topology? Well, we should again convert this into something that we can write with Pauli matrices. So this is the Hamiltonian written in terms of 2x2 matrices. And I can write it pretty much like this. There's an average energy plus a pseudospin dot Pauli matrices. Right? What does the pseudospin do? Looks familiar, right? So the pseudospin tells the up is the exciton. Sorry, I guess it's the opposite the way I've written it. Tau z up should be the photon, tau z down is the exciton. This is the relative energy between them. And then the x component and y component are the real and imaginary parts of this matrix element, g. Now, the z component part, you can see, has to go from a photon, from a photon-like nature to an exciton-like nature. So it has to change signs. So you go from up to down. And the question is, again, what does the pseudospin do around the resonance, and does it wrap around the equator of the unit sphere? So to know that, we need to figure out whether g, the thing that determines the direction in the plane of the pseudospin, we need to figure out whether g wraps around the origin of the complex plane as we probe it in the ring of momenta that describe this resonance between the photon and exciton. Right, so what is g? Well, we have the exciton. We excite the exciton with an incoming photon with momentum p. G of p is just the matrix element between the photon and the exciton. But in the exciton, you have particle and hole. You can move the hole to the other side of this Brian cat. And you get that G of p is pretty much this. It's the matrix element to excite an electron from the valence band at negative p over 2 to the conduction band at plus p over 2 using light. But this is the same matrix element, essentially, that I had before for the Floquet topological construction. So a potential Floquet insulator yields topological polariton bands. So what I've shown you, basically, is that this polariton bands actually could acquire a Chern number if the material that we were using was capable of producing a Floquet topological insulator. All right, so now before I go to realizations, questions about the principle? Move on? Question? What?
You're going to discuss the gap or the lack of it.
The gap or lack of it?
Bands.
I may. So if I don't, ask me again. So I'm going to discuss, yes. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So I think Attach is asking about the fact that, you know, I can talk about topology of these bands all I want, but you know, for practical matters, topology matters because you have ed states, right? And here there's no gap in energy for the ed states to actually live in. Right? That was the question? Yeah, I'll talk about that. So we will show how to overcome this problem. Other questions? Okay, so how can you realize this thing from at least a theorist's perspective at first? So if we start with mercury telluride, cadmium telluride wells that are not topological, I talked about the double degeneracy due to time reversal let's break that by applying a magnetic field. And then we have the Hamiltonian that I showed you before. As you can see, I like a lot, the Brennivik-Hughes-Zhang Hamiltonian. And now the idea is to have, we put the quantum well in an optical cavity, and we use the transverse electric mode, the TE mode, of the photon in the well. And we know that for the TE mode, the electric field and the polarization of the photon is always perpendicular to the direction of the momentum, and it's in plane. And at least at high momentum, in the TEM mode, the electric field is out of the plane, and therefore does not couple to the electrons in the quantum well. So we'll ignore the TEM mode. And we can use this helicity of the photons. We get this polarization for the photons as a function of momentum Q. And therefore, the coupling between light and electron becomes sigma dot this polarization. And you can see we have sigma plus e to the I theta, sigma minus e to the minus I theta. And this conspires to give you this coupling number G from the previous slides that goes like e to the I theta q. And what is a theta q? It's just the direction of momentum. And therefore, G is a complex number that wraps around the origin of the complex plane. So we get this topology fairly easily in this construction. Now, we tried it out on a computer. We just took this, we took an exciton, a photon, and made the winding coupling between them. We wanted to be comforted to see that indeed you see ed states. And indeed you do. So if you just take a large mass exciton, this thing, and a very small mass photon, this thing, and you hybridize them, you indeed get two bands, two polariton bands with two different Chern numbers. And when you solve it on a cylinder, you indeed get two ed states appearing. Now here we took even a slightly negative mass for the exciton to expose this ed states. So I'll get back to this negative exciton mass in a second, or to the fact that we need a gap. But you can see that the principle, at least, seems to work pretty well. Yeah, sure. There's no scale here. But I'll give you the short answer, which is the size of the gap for solid-state realization would be around an MeV. And I'll show you how it arises in a second. So practical matters. We need the half of Brennivik-Hughes-Zhang model. We need half of the cadmium telluride band structure. So we have a doubly degenerate conduction band, doubly degenerate valence band, with JZs doing these things. We also have a large G factor for cadmium telluride. So if we put a very small magnetic field, you immediately do this. You see you have a large gap and a small gap, and you can work around the small gap for producing excitons. And it has been shown that you can get very substantial exciton-photon couplings of many tens of MeV. The problem is that the exciton size might be too large, since those wells have a small gap. So it might be that the topology will not follow through. But nonetheless, this is a good realization. An equally good realization that has much tighter excitons is transition metal dichalcogenides. And I ripped this off the web from somewhere in Switzerland. and the dichalcogenides are basically like graphene, except with a very strongly broken inversion symmetry. So you have the orbitals around the K and K prime point completely separated with time-reversed spins. And again, I can apply a magnetic field to this. So just before that, I'll just say this has the advantage of a very small exciton size, and up to 1 eV of binding, even as far as I can tell from the literature. But it has a small G factor, so none of this G factor of a 50. But even with a field of the order of 2 tesla, you can produce 1 millielectron volt range of energies where just one exciton lives. You isolate the one exciton. And now you can couple it to the photon field in the cavity and produce a topological band structure for the polaritons. And again, the scale for the photon-exciton coupling is around 20 MeV. Now, there was this, that was one practical matter. How do you get like single excitonic mode that I wanted? But then there's the other practical matter of getting the gap. So edge polaritons, so if you want edge polaritons to appear as a result of this topology, we want them to appear in a gap. So to do that, you can fabricate, you can decorate your system, particularly the excitonic part of it, with another lattice that will open just a regular Bloch gap at the right place. What is the right place? Make the decorating lattice, have a pitch similar to the resonance momentum of your polariton and exciton. And if you do that, you can take a very innocent-looking spectrum like this and make it into a complicated band structure, but with many non-trivial Chern numbers. And if you solve this problem on a cylinder, again, you get these nice gaps that have edge states in them. And what is those gaps? They depend on, actually, they depend on the scale of the decorating potential. I think you can achieve an MEV fairly easily. And those are the ones that determine the topological gap. All right, questions so far? Sorry? There is no Chern number zero gap. You go from minus 1 to 0 to 1. So the Chern number keeps changing. Which means that you'll have a net state going from here all the way to here unaffected by the zero. So it is reasonable to see this in all gaps. All right, so there's an even simpler way of getting excitons, of getting topological bosons. So you can do this with indirect excitons. So take just a regular zinc plant double well. I don't know what this is doing here, so apologies. So it was hidden when I was looking at the slides, but you can see the reference very clearly. So if you have a particle hole in two different layers, they live forever, essentially. And furthermore, you can access the hole to be, so this is a zinc blend semiconductor, so again, it has the double degeneracy valence band, double degenerate conduction band, but this time Jz plus minus 3/2 and Jz plus minus 1/2. And you can have the bottom layer be the 1/2 electrons and the top layer be electrons with the plus minus 3/2. You have four low-lying indirect excitons with relative angular momentum plus minus 1 and plus minus 2. But these are split, so you can split them with a magnetic field, which will give you some Zeeman interaction for particles and for holes. But then those layers will have a... this layer will also have a Dresselhaus interaction. And that Dresselhaus interaction, because of the angular momentum differences, must be of a winding type. So again, we have this winding coupling between the low-lying excitons that arise from these bilayers. Now, if we look practically what it means, again, we need to... So we have the winding couplings. We also need to produce some kind of a potential that will produce gaps in the right place to give us topological edge states. The best thing to do is to have triangular lattice. You can impose it with, say, three lasers, or just with a decoration. And if you try to solve for the band structure with the Dresselhaus interaction, with the Zeeman coupling, and with this extra lattice potential, you get some crazy band structure, but with clear gaps that show topological edge states. And reasonable parameters are given here, so a magnetic field of around 2 tesla, not unlikely. Spin orbit coupling is very small, but nonetheless, you get gaps of a micro EV, they're small, but those excitons live forever, so you should be able to measure them, you should be able to resolve them. And just the last way of getting topological bosonic excitations, generically, seems to be the following. So this this slide I stole from Charles. So what you need, basically, is photon modes, two photon modes, TETM, or the two circularly polarized photon modes, coupled to two degenerate excitons. And here's generically how you would get topological behavior. So this is the general coupling matrix. But now, let's assume that the two excitons are degenerate. Also, let's forget about this other diagonal, because it's not as important. We have the excitons and photons hybridizing to form four polariton bands, two low-lying, two high. If you concentrate on the low-lying polariton bands, they're coupled by this delta C, which is actually the coupling between the two photon helicities. So the low-energy sector of this consists of two polaritons with a coupling that, because of the nature of the light, is winding. And this is following this reference from the Kevorkian and Malpich group. So this delta will have a double winding, and again, we'll give you a polariton band, two polariton bands that have opposite Chern number, and if we add to that lattice potential for the polaritons, you'll get the topological head states. So here's how it works. So this is the general recipe. So introduce a lattice potential. That takes a generic band structure, and as you increase the strength of the lattice potential, a triangular one, you expose a Dirac cone. That's why it's so good to have a triangular lattice. You add the magnetic field to split this Dirac cone into some Dirac diamond. And now it's the hybridization that has the winding between the two polariton modes, which comes from the two photon modes or from the two exciton modes or what have you, will open a gap over here that will be topological. So this is the winding coupling. It gets this delta P. Delta Z was just the difference from here to here. And you get edge modes over here. And here's a simulation for this generic story. you can, again, see this nice topological gap emerging. This is a simulation of basically there's a simulation, a direct simulation of a Schrödinger equation for two polaritons with a winding coupling and a triangular lattice and a Zeeman coupling. And the gaps here, again, typically for this story, 1 MeV. All right, so let me conclude. Many avenues for exhibiting non-equilibrium topological behavior. I talk about topolaritons and topoexitons, cadmium telluride wells, transition metal decalcogenides. It's harder to say decalcogenides than topolaritons, I think. Indirect excitons and generic excitons in cavities with TETM splitting. And I should advertise that there's a later paper from our group, again led by Charles Torsten and Tim Liu, that talks about how to get topological Bogoliubov excitations in a strongly interacting bosonic soup that's driven by six lasers to give you a Kagome lattice. And I won't talk about this further. And I'm fully responsible for this abomination. Now, before you go, I also have a mountain picture for you. So before Derek's and Liang's workshop, there's also going to be a workshop on topics very similar to this conference that we're organizing in Aspen in early June. So we also have mountains in Aspen, as you remember. It's in the summer, so I couldn't show you any pictures with snow in them. That would be unfair advertisement. But please consider yourself invited and apply. Okay, with that, I'll close. Ask for more questions.
Questions?
Yeah, a question on so in solid state you typically see these things in ARP, this edge mode in ARP. Have you thought of how this can be seen perhaps in the photon that comes out of the cavity?
I think so. So I think it was
Maybe just to couple this to in terms of the issue of heating, is this have you thought if this coupling to a cavity mode is less dangerous in terms of heating than driving?
Oh, yeah. Well, the cavity mode doesn't need to be... So unless you want to observe, the cavity mode doesn't need to be driven, right? So you put in photons to see the photoluminescence, but I think you do that at will, right? You can do that in... you just do it for a short time, and then you see what comes out pretty much, right? Whereas in order to get like a coherent Floquet topological insulator, you have to continuously bath it in terahertz coherent radiation. And yeah, I think the heating issues are really not there in the polariton. It's really, and also one has to remember that the Floquet topological insulators present a way of engineering your band structure for electrons, right? So that you can use them later, maybe like topological semiconductors. Whereas the Polariton story says, well, look, you even have topology in places where you don't expect, but not in the ground state of the electrons or the cavity, in some excited mode, where you wouldn't think to look at unless you probe it with some photons.
Okay. There was a question regarding like adding, going to higher Chern number.
Uh-huh.
So is it like intuitively correct to think of the polarization of the photon that's has that some angular momentum, it adds up to the Chern number? And if it's so, if I do Laguerre Gaussian beam, can I jack up the...
If you do what beam?
Laguerre Gaussian beams have
orbital
angular
right?
momentum that can go to any number.
Yeah, we were actually thinking about that, and so I think you can produce better constructions with that. And just the statement about the light angular momentum, that's exactly what's exploited here for this coupling. Apparently, this arises because you have two circular polarizations; they have opposite angular momentum. Mm-hmm. Now, for the Laguerre beam, is that in real space?
In real space, yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't figure out whether, like, if you do this in real space, whether that translates into a higher Chern. I think mm-hmm. it's a very good question to mm-hmm. ask. We just didn't figure it out. Maybe my collaborators have comments about this. No.
Okay.
So another question. So I've seen in previous seminars at this conference, if you go consider polaritons in the ultra strong cap regime, you have a natural gap which is opening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Just because, I mean, they're almost degenerate at zero momentum, and then they separate, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you talk as a gap. And if you have a coupling with this winding phase, can I have this topological polarity to the ultra-strong kappa regime? Are the anti-horizon non-rotating wave terms of light-matter interaction spoils the picture?
Yeah, okay. So it's not the non-rotating wave that spoils the picture. This is like there's a big analogy between these Fouquet constructions for topological physics and P-wave superconductors. Because in the beginning of the talk, what I showed you is that you put in radiation, it produces some kind of ring of resonance, and then there's a number that winds on this ring of resonance. If I had done a particle Hall transformation, this would be the pairing, and the pairing winding around the resonance means that I have a P plus IP superconductor. If that's the case, of course, the gap has to go to zero at zero momentum. Right, so that's why I cannot go to strong coupling at zero momentum, because every time that I will do a construction that will give me a winding, just by analyticity, it has to vanish at the origin. And actually, that's the reason why the gaps we get are so small, because we have to make some kind of a compromise between wanting to have a winding and wanting to have a big gap. That means that we need to work on some intermediate momenta away from zero. Does this answer the question?
You can have a gap also at wave vector different from zero. But now the model you consider basically an exchange GQ and
right.
a dagger Q, BQ plus the emission conjugate. What happens if you take A plus a dagger times B plus a dagger? So basically you consider non-rotating wave terms.
But then what's the term that produces the mixing, the hybridization?
No, I mean, light-matter interaction, you have always these terms. You can drop if you are...
But you want them to just be straight real, or...?
No, what I mean...
I mean, the rotating wave approximation just took away the time dependence. I mean, there was no rotating wave approximation in the second part of the talk.
Right, but the Hamiltonian, it was basically A dagger B plus A B dagger. So all the terms A dagger, B dagger, A, B have been dropped back, okay?
But I see. Yeah,
this is fine in the weak or stronger.
You're saying something like this, yeah.
For the polar is already, yes, exactly. So my question is, if you crack up the constant G, so you go very large, and you put anti-resonant terms, you will have a natural gap opening in the dispersion.
I see.
Do you have an edge state in this?
I don't know. We didn't check it. We used the conserving approximation for that. Yes. It's an interesting question. We didn't check it.
So can I say this is a anomalous Hall effect of photon, of boson system?
Yes.
We are doing. Can I interpret it as anomalous? All these chain numbers are Z, right? Not Z2.
That's all right. Time it's a Hall effect, yeah.
So it's an anomalous Hall effect of bosons.
Yes. I mean, I think it's reasonable to interpret it like this, yes.
Yeah, so this H state on this cavity, because for electronic system, they do photon emission RPs to detect this H state or transport. For this kind of system, bosonic system, all these are bosonic system, right? So how they detect this H state around the cavity?
You can put in a photon. Uh-huh. It gets absorbed into this mode, and then it moves in a chiral fashion.
Around
or
the edge
alternatively,
of the cavity.
You can, yeah, along the edge of the cavity. But what is the photon doing? It's creating an exciton.
Yeah.
Right. So I would say that this is of course an heir to the work by Haldane and Raghu by Shri and Duncan, who showed how to do this how to have a Haldane model for photons. Right.
Okay.
The problem is that the breaking of time reversal is very hard for photons. So these realizations are nice,
yeah,
because you can use the ability to break time reversal for electrons, which is much easier, mm-hmm, in order to protect your head states and to produce these chain numbers.
Can you get Z2 topological insulator here?
I don't know. We didn't figure it out.
Okay.
I mean, I bet that you can get a Z2 topological insulator with the Floquet constructions, but we didn't do it. And I don't know about Z2 topolaritons. I just don't know. We haven't pursued it. Thanks.
I don't know well these systems, but I was wondering how does decay of the exciton enters and may affect the robustness of the topological phases?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, okay, so the modes here, you know, if you're thinking about electrons, well, you have nice edge modes, you have a Fermi surface, they can just move on forever. Of course, excitations don't have that. So the question of what would be the decay? So one decay is, of course, the excitons just dying because of recombination, right? So that's a longer time than the gaps that we see open. There's another problem of decay. So they don't have a bulk to couple to. So in terms of disorder, disorder scattering is also suppressed because of the reduced phase space for scattering. But what they can do is they can just drop in momentum. So bosons can start over here, and they can drop in momentum. And they may end up being absorbed into the bulk band after a little bit. So there's nothing that prevents them from doing that, like giving up energy to some phonon modes or some other modes in the lattice. That's the danger. And I don't know what the time is. Just looking around, it seems like that's also in the right range. Namely, it's in the many nanosecond range for that to happen. But I think, is the primary decay mode that you should be concerned about. Not the recombination, which is relatively slow.
So in the indirect case, don't you worry about broadening due to disorder, because these guys are heavy and subject to disorder?
I think that's probably the limiting factor for that realization. Namely, I think the disorder that was achieved is of the order of the gap. You may need to work a little extra to really resolve those. I mean, it's conceptually the easiest, probably the smallest the smallest pain theoretical construction. Experiment must be very clean in order to resolve this. But and I think it's the same problem that those head states can lose energy because they're excitations, and they can get absorbed into some bulk band. But I think, nonetheless, the numbers are such that it's right now it's at the limit of applicability. So I think clean it a little bit more, and we'll be OK.
Just another comment, actually, on the Z2. So, like, strictly speaking, since T squared is not minus 1 here in photonic systems, you cannot get it. But formally, if, for example, sigma Z is preserved, you can find that some pseudo-time reversal operator.
Pseudo-time.
Yeah, so it's like formally you can write it if sigma Z is conserved with the spin orbit Hamiltonian, for example, and then call it a Z2, but it's a little bit not the same as the Z2 in electronics.
The major concern is still this H state, which are boundaries, which is very vulnerable to decay. Because
not a completely increasing system like an electronic. So this age state where it's still sub decay. Right?
Look, I mean, we're talking about plasmonics. You know, these things decay left and right. But there's still like a big industry because we're trying to understand how to manipulate photons in the best way, right? And polaritons is a good way of manipulating photons. This would live longer than bulk polaritons because of the topological stipulation. That's my feeling.
Ignite the photon outside the cavity. There's always a box outside the cavity. This is an exciton polariton and the mode is ignite the box outside the cavity. That one will cause decay.
That could also cause decay, but that's the same story with regular polaritons. And it's always there. It's always there. Look, this is not a fermion. This is a signature of topological behavior in the excitation spectrum. And it's a bosonic system. So maybe it's this, I would say that. And it's the same for photons. It's the same for photon Hall effect. I mean, there's no Fermi surface for photons. But these are not, what? Yeah, they can couple to the outside. But I think the leading mode of decay would not be to outside photons. You can control that, I think, pretty reasonably well. It'll be losing momentum and ending up in the bulk. I think that would be the leading thing. So, I mean, I find this question good, but I don't have a practical, I have a practical answer. Is it protected? It's not protected in the same way that electrons are protected for the following reason. Electrons cannot decay into the Fermi surface, right? But if you have an empty band, if you have a Kane-Mellie model or a BHZ model, right? But that's empty, right? You just pumped up all the electrons. And now with like a nonlinear IV measurement, you put an electron up in one orbital that happens to be on the edge state. Because of disorder in the system, it can actually scatter off disorder and emit phonons into the bulk, right? And it'll also lose energy and eventually get absorbed into the bulk band, right? So in that sense, this is the same protection. So it's not. So if you want to put it in empty footing, you should think about the band structure of an empty semiconductor or an empty band structure with dead states. But this is the level of protection that it has. It just has a reduced phase space for scattering, for emitting phonons due to disorder because of just kinematic considerations. But it's the same as for electrons. It's the same of decay of, say, currents, non-equilibrium currents on the edge of an Hall state, which we know it's a slow decay.
It protects the path, but not the lifetime.
Exactly. I mean, it protects the state. The state cannot go away.
The lifetime is a lifetime.
Yeah, it's not. It won't live forever.
Because of their photonic character, I mean, it should be immune to phonon relaxation. Like there is very little phase space.
That's what I think. But I mean, the excitons can couple a little bit, right?
Yeah, but given their photonic character, I think that conserving sort of energy and okay, so you're at the edge, so.
Yeah, I think the edge reduces phase space. It's interesting to say that in our simulations, I didn't show the nice animations of it, but the photonic component is actually fairly small. So you took something that's trivial, and you added very little photons, and oops, you have this topological signature. The topological signature has something like, I think, 10% of amplitude or less. Of photon. I think it's on the small side of polariton. So the solid state is definitely there. But like in quantum Hall states, we know that the edge states, if you look, say, at decay of heat currents in the edge of Hall states in semiconductor wells, we know that they decay over, I mean, it takes them microns until they decay. Even then, we don't understand why they decay. It's probably disorder inside the bulk of the sample. So Jim Eisenstein made these experiments, and he sees like those currents go for many microns, and then they decay. And it's not clear why, actually, because the phase space is sufficiently small that it should go longer. And it's probably disorder and puddles of compressible things, compressible electron puddles inside the quantum Hall state. Yeah. And I hope this answers the question. OK.
Okay, well, there are no further questions. Let's thank Gil, all the speakers, as well as the rest of us.
And the organizer. Some more here.